Okay, we are recording.
Message.
All right, so this is the Climate Literacy Network call on August 30th, 2011, and Mark McCaffrey here in Boulder at the University of Colorado. Who else is on the line?
Gary Brosh is here from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Hello, Gary. Don Dugan-Haas from the Paleontological Research Institution and its Museum of the Earth in Ithaca, New York.
Good. And Scott Carley.
Yes.
So, small group today and no particular agenda. We don't have any presentations or anything, but I just wanted to, why don't we go around if anybody has any announcements, and Scott, I think you had some information about the National Academy's Board on Science Education.
Yeah, I know Tamara sent down, around to the listserv the URL for this event. This is on tomorrow and Thursday. This is Climate Change Education in Elementary School through the First 2 Years of College, a workshop. And it's a very full 2 days, and actually many of our members are actually presenting at it. Tamara's there, Frank's on, so is Susan. There may be others too, so I know at least the three of them are deeply involved in this. On our event webpage, I've included the same URL, and it goes to the right page with the instructions for attending remotely. I want to slip in periodically and listen to that. In the past, we've had difficulties with them. Frank has talked about this, that they have some sort of technical problems in, I guess it's the F Street Conference Center, where it's been difficult to do this. But I'm willing to try again and see if we can listen in on this stuff. There is also off that web page an agenda, so that gives a better sense of what's actually going to happen over the next 2 days. So this is pretty important. It's really, as it says here, it's presenting a workshop that brings together scholars and practitioners from a wide range of disciplines and expertise to discuss the teaching and learning of climate change and climate science in formal education from kindergarten to the first 2 years of college. So it's pretty much our own sort of mandate in the network to be looking at those things. So this is an important, more public discussion of these issues.
Okay, great.
Any other questions? Since I've got this stuff up on my computer, I can, if you want to know more about the agenda, I can tell you the registration is closed for folks who are participating, you know, on site. They close on Monday, but it looks like we can dial in.
Okay, so we don't need to register ahead of time.
No, it doesn't look like that. At least the information is here. I actually tried to register, and of course it said no, that was yesterday. But the information's all here. So, and it just looks like they're using the live PowerPoint is coming through Adobe Connect, and then the audio is just looks like the phone number or a conference call number.
Okay, so they get started at 8:45 Eastern Time, which would be 6:45 Mountain and 5:45 Pacific Time.
Yeah, it's early morning.
An early morning for you, Scott and Gary.
Well, I don't need to sit through breakfast with them. Probably welcome. But by 9 o'clock, it's starting to get into some important stuff. So.
Yeah.
So it may be something that I'll probably dip in and out of as I can.
Yeah,
that's my plan as well.
Yeah. It's like I've got other things to do, but it's something that you can kind of put in the background. It's like mood music.
Okay.
And I know some of the other ones have had some really useful information, so I do expect this to be quite helpful. And I'm sure we'll get a full report back from Tamara and Frank and Susan.
Good.
I recognize some of the other names, but they're not folks that I know. Roberta.
I know most of them.
Yeah.
So the Eddie Boys from University of Liverpool, anybody know about him?
Nope.
No.
Because he's focusing on student mental models of global warming and climate change. There was somebody from a Canadian university at the AGU last year that was doing some work on mental models, as I recall. But
I think it was. I can go back. I probably have notes on that. Very good point. Mark, do you know if Eddie is involved in, what is it, climate schools? Or what is, there's a group in England that has been doing some stuff that I know you thought really highly of. It was
right, the Climate Change School Project, which is out of Northeast UK.
Okay.
One woman named Krista McKenzie, who is actually from Chicago.
Okay.
But she's associated, I think, with the University of York, so... I'm not quite sure. I haven't had an update on what's going on with that project recently. I know they're struggling for funding just like many of us. So.
Yeah. Mark, one of the things that is sort of in my hopper is lining up speakers for this call over the next academic year. Do you think it would be interesting to try to maybe have someone from England, from that project, actually talk a little bit about what they're doing? We've had somebody from England at one time. I don't think we've ever had a presentation sort of off of actually the continental U.S. I don't think we've had anyone from Hawaii, actually.
That's, I think it's worth the third.
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering, because I know you're certainly interested in it, and it's certainly it's something that has come up with the CLEAN project in terms of the resources that we've looked at. I think we looked at a couple from them. So.
Yeah.
And that raises a whole other question.
Definitely worthwhile. The other suggestion would be to see if representatives from the various CSEP, Climate Change Education Partnership projects, would be willing to provide an overview of what they're doing, particularly in terms of how it might be of interest to the Climate Literacy Network, and also if they have any products or things that might fit in with CLEAN. You know, it would be good to know that sooner than later.
Yes.
So you've got ways of contacting a lot of the PIs on those projects?
Yeah, I have the tri-agency list. In fact, I've been trying to develop an update, though. We've talked about this before, an update for the Climate Literacy Network website. I think we have like 44 of the projects, but certainly the list I have is well over 100, and when you talk to Frankie's as well, it's actually closer to 200 when you really go through the whole list.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping over the next couple of months to actually add to that, but since we actually haven't decided how that's to be presented, sort of the community stuff, I sort of held off a little bit, but I have been doing some stuff in the background. But yes, the short answer is yes, I have a list of the PIs and... emails and such.
Okay.
And I know Tamara has some folks that she would like to present here too. So once she's back from this round table, I'm going to sort of pick her brains a little bit on who she thinks would be great.
All right.
So this is Gary. So I have a busy morning because I'm going to ring off soon. But thanks for all of you for all of your work. My oncoming project is a series of billboards and airport advertising displays on educating about climate change. They're very just straight photo depictions. Right now we started with a repeat glacier picture of the Mendenhall Glacier in Alaska. This billboard went up on a concourse in Reagan National Airport this morning. And there will be more. This is a project of the Del Mar Global Trust, a small environmental foundation in Florida. And they have a website, thisisclimatechange.org, and that's the name of the project, This is Climate Change. And it's strictly educational. The website will back up the billboards that show mostly before and after pictures of various climate changes with more pictures and more information from the scientific literature and from trusted science sites. I don't know if the website is quite up yet, but I'll send a note around to the network by email when everything is up.
Okay.
But, that's
right now, if you're passing through National, especially, I think it's in the U.S. Airlines, close to the U.S. Airways area, which is the largest airline in the airport. So this one should be seen by quite a few people. It'll be up for probably at least 6 months, and they've got the space for a year. So we're going to put another picture in there after six months probably. So this is climatechange.org is the website, and that started this morning at Reagan Airport. So that's
very
my
awesome.
My sort of artistic or more maybe in your more public kind of educational visual reminder that of the changes that are happening.
Yeah,
they're real and documented.
Well, yes. I mean, I try not to do anything that I don't have a scientist behind in terms of a paper, and we're doing stuff that has lots of documentation. So,
yeah.
especially in this group, once I put it out on the email, and you can go to the website if you've got ideas. You guys have all got great resources, and I don't have. The website will be a work in progress, and I'm not doing the website. I'm just advising on it. So, I hope to provide a lot more information for them.
Great.
I see the website's not up yet, but is a Facebook page.
There is a Facebook page, and in fact, there's a picture. Pictures just went up of installing the display. So, and anyway, the woman who's the executive director of this foundation is in Washington, so she went down this morning to take pictures of the billboard going
mm-hmm.
up.
Gary, how do they spell their first name of the foundation? Delmar?
It's D-E-L.
Yeah.
And then M-A-R.
M-A-R. Okay.
M-A-R, yeah. Two words, Delmar and then Global Trust. Yeah, and they have a website. I mean, it's not a very public place. I mean, they're very quiet. They've given money to some very powerful groups, including like Sea Shepherd and so on, that are, you know, no-nonsense environmental groups. So, but this is their first foray into some kind of public, you know, public attention on them and on an issue.
Right. They have a Twitter page. it came up as a Twitter, too, so I'm just wondering whether they have the pictures or something. Okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
So any of you who have been through the Denver airport might have seen some of the time-lapse work of James Balog and company with the Extreme Ice Survey.
Yes, I
got it in a couple of the terminals, and that was something that then-Mayor John Hickenlooper, now governor of Colorado, worked out with Jim Balog. So,
yeah, those are quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of missed my train watching them. Good.
But anyway, there's sort of a confluence of ideas here in terms of getting more material just about the effects to remind people it's actually, while we've been banding about politics and all the denier stuff, the Earth is continuing to change. And Al Gore and his group is now called Climate Reality. They're doing a big event in the middle of this month, middle of September, to bring back into view to more people the changes that are actually happening around the planet. And of course, Bill McKibben and many other people are at the White House every day trying to bring attention to a decision about a pipeline for the tar sands and to encourage the president not to approve it. So there's a lot of public stuff going on right now, which I'm happy to be a part of that very independently here. It all just sort of came together on this in this few week period here.
Great. Thanks, Gary.
Okay. Well, thank you all, and I'll put that up on the CLN listserv as soon as everything's ready.
Okay.
And I'll put it up on our website too.
Good. Thank you very much. Okay.
Good. Thanks for this, Gary. This is great work.
Take care, you guys.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
You too.
So how about you, Don? What's happening up in your neck of the woods?
Lots of Marcellus Shale-related effort in trying to help people understand the, I think that, as I've said before in these discussions, I think the biggest part of our outreach ought to be understanding energy context as much as Marcellus Shale, and for me personally, understanding that it's probably more important how much energy you use than where it comes from. So we're working on that. We're going to be working with a community that we're trying to finalize which community we're going to be working with in terms of working with educators across a community that is going, that is now or is about to be impacted by Marcellus Shale development. Right now, New York State has a moratorium in effect on slick water horizontal hydrofracturing, which is shortened to fracking. Soon, next year, it looks likely that that moratorium will be lifted and the energy landscape in New York State will change for better or worse. So that's been the most climate-related piece of my work of late, is figuring out how to get that up and running.
So you might be interested, there's a similar effort going on here in Colorado with some people at INSTAR, which is our sister institute, the Institute for Arctic and Alpine Research, and
mm-hmm.
there's a scientist named Mark Williams who is planning to put together a website kind of Colorado-centric, focused on hydrofracking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was encouraging him to think bigger than just Colorado, but I guess they want to somewhat limit the scope. But
mm-hmm.
I've certainly
been
a lot of things on the news recently of
mm-hmm.
Or sort of ads about how these various companies are trying to be more transparent and
mm-hmm.
alleviate people's concerns. But
And I think it's fundamentally important to understand that if you're going to use energy, it's going to come from somewhere and have environmental consequences.
Yeah.
And to recognize whether what is being proposed is better or worse than what's happening now is really pretty complicated. The deeper I dig into this stuff, the more depressed I get. understanding, and I guess we mentioned this last week, understanding that the largest source of American oil is, or imported oil, is Canada, and they're now getting close to 50% of their production from the tar sands.
Yeah.
And if you hold this up against that, or this up against coal, and of course, you know, and ultimately, it really makes me want to figure out how to use almost no energy, which
yeah, exactly.
is not really an option.
Yeah, it's a very tough situation.
Yeah,
I think there's also the sort of the feeling like, well, if we don't use it, then just pipe it over to China.
Right. Right.
But, so the new energy literacy principles will be coming out very shortly. I think you all know about the work that's been going on kind of behind the scenes started last November 1st. We had a meeting at the AAAS offices in D.C. with some people at Department of Energy kind of taking the lead. But a meeting that we organized initially, and we basically said, we're going to have this meeting. It would be great if you guys could come. And the goal was to start the process of developing a companion to climate literacy that's focused on energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Department of Energy stepped up and took the challenge on. And it's been through quite a rigorous vetting. It's actually been at the White House Office of Science, Technology, Policy, and Carl Wyman, who's like the deputy science advisor under John Holdren has been helping shepherd this through the process. And Carl Wieman is actually a Nobel Prize winner in physics here from CU Boulder, who has been really super involved with science education over the years, and including the famous FET simulation, which didn't fare too well in the plane review camp this past.
Talked
about it yesterday.
Yeah.
So anyhow,
the
literacy
Wieman.
Principle should be coming out very soon. And
Mark, wasn't this actually a request from Stephen Chu, the secretary?
Yeah, that's our understanding, is that he made it a priority, although, you know, partly because we pestered him.
That's fine, whatever.
Oh, yeah, really, whatever.
Right.
But, it's a high-level priority.
Who do you think would be good to present that? Once it's released, we certainly should have a discussion about it on the call, because it's going to have impact for all of us. I mean, you both of you just mentioned two energy related activities.
Matthew Inman, who is the Einstein Fellow at the Department of Energy,
you think Matthew would be the best to present it?
Yeah, well, he's been the one who's been.
And I know
most
Matthew.
Immersed, yeah.
Yeah, he's been. He was charged with helping shepherd it through the process.
So is
his fellowship still going on? Was it a two-year fellowship?
Okay. Yeah.
He's going to do 2 years.
Yeah, I think normally a year with the possible renewal. And my understanding is he did get it renewed.
Excellent.
Good.
Well, I'll contact him and see whether he once it's released, it'd be great for him to. Present it to us, because I know a lot of people on this call will be really interested in what came out of that process.
Yeah, and just to let you know, one of the hang-ups right now that's somewhat delayed this is the fact that Carl Wieman wanted to tack on some essentially guiding principles for learning. And I think it's something that he kind of conjured up himself. It hasn't been through any particular review or vetting process, which is somewhat problematic at this late date for him to just tack it on there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're now in the process of trying to identify through the folks at National Academies, people who are learning experts that can help vet this. But hopefully it won't cause the schedule to be derailed too much.
Right.
In my view, it was related but kind of tangential, and in a sense, there's a question in my mind about who are we to be saying what guiding principles of learning should be.
That's a whole other community.
I mean, there should be connections, but trying to mesh it in at the tail end of the project does not seem like the way to go.
Yeah.
And part of my take on synthesizing the fundamental principles from across the literacy or the different literacies that have been defined has to do with understanding the cognitive science side of this stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that is really important, but I think that throwing it in right now probably is not going to get you to a place that works very well.
Yeah. Well, this whole notion, not to go too off on it, but the notion of developing a sense of space and sense of time, these are very age-dependent. That's Piaget's work, and obviously lots of other people after that. These are very difficult notions to get a hold of, and certainly time and space is critical in all the geosciences, and I guess also in energy to some degree. But I wouldn't put it in there. I would leave that, let the learning sciences put a set of principles together, and they can relate it to content if they want. It seems a little odd to try to put it into this kind of framework. But anyway, that's let's hope it just comes up pretty quickly and
yeah.
get it out there. Because it's
going
to have, as you know, Mark, and this is more for Don's benefit, but it's going to, these new literacy principles, energy and literacy principles, are going to reshape how we code things in the clean pathway, those resources right now.
Scott, can you speak up just a little bit?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe it's I'm just a little bit further away from the speakerphone. I was just saying that these literacy principles are sort of going to substitute for the sort of placeholder energy awareness principles that we used at during the first 2 years of CLEAN.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of work to do there. So these are quite important for the CLEAN project.
Yeah.
To get those out there. And, you know, the version certainly that I saw is a real strong improvement over what we were working with.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So it's really significant. Puts it on the same level.
Yeah, and Cynthia Howell, who's now at Colorado School of Mines, has been charged with helping do the alignment there.
Yeah.
She's familiar with the resource collecting process and review tool, et cetera.
I suspect we'll drop the awareness principle.
Yeah.
We'll just vanish. That's fine.
Yeah, that's the plan. But it'll take some backtracking. And.
Yeah. Well, you know, this raises a whole other question. This is a climate literacy network, but what many of us realized, you know, several years ago, is, and Mark, you certainly have spearheaded this notion, is that we really need to look at solutions, and energy is a major part of that. And I'm just, you know, I keep wondering whether we need to make sure that if we do, have Matthew do a presentation on the energy literacy, do we actually want to start doing a series of presentations that really are looking at solutions? And maybe in part to counter, you know, what Mark or what Don, you sort of said, it's like it's really hard to do this work and not get depressed by it.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering whether maybe we want to make that kind of a focus, maybe even for our presentation. Wow. I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah.
I
definitely agree.
Yeah, and it's thoroughly depressing to me. So.
In one area where I think
in the opposite direction would be good.
You know, one area that we haven't found a lot of resources for CLEAN, it relates to adaptation and sort of risk preparedness, resiliency, and that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, I look at what's happening in New England with the aftermath of Irene, and a lot of those flooding issues are classic natural hazard disaster preparedness type of things that are the type of sudden events that will be seen more and more of, frankly. Not just because of climate change, but also by lousy design and poor planning and so forth.
I mean, we don't build things the way we used to. I mean, that's...
No.
One of my colleagues in New Hampshire has been looking at bridges, and she compares, like, old bridges and new design bridges, and it's very clear the new design bridges simply would not hold up the same way as the old ones would. Now, that's not to say, I mean, there's a lot of Vermont old bridges that got destroyed in the last couple of days, but you just sort of see that the same, you know, the corners are being cut, so to speak, in terms of design. And
well, I think there's that issue coupled with things that the Army Corps of Engineering has done that may or may not ultimately be good decisions for 100-year planning and in the context of climate change, too.
Yep. Yep. That would be, that's a really interesting topic, at least to me. I'm just trying to think of how we even tackle something like that is those sort of shifting standards in infrastructure, and are we really setting ourselves up for, you know, continued massive failure of infrastructure because we simply are not planning ahead for never, you know, for what can happen, what we see happening right now, but certainly what we start seeing in many areas in the next 20 or 30 years in terms of just, you know, the amount of rainfall and snowpack and that kind of stuff. It'd be very interesting to try to engage. I mean, do we want to engage the Army Corps of Engineers? and just say, okay, we want to hear what you're doing about climate change or climate adaptation design. That'd be an interesting conversation.
So I actually came across a interesting tool that is from US EPA, and let me see if I can find the link to it. It's called CREATE, C-R-E-A-T, and it's specifically for water resource managers.
Yeah, you just sent that around, I think, to some of us.
Yeah, I guess I did, didn't I?
Yeah, no, that's good. No, absolutely.
But it only runs on PCs or Macs that have a Windows software. It looks pretty. It seems to me it could have some enormous potential as an educational tool. It's meant for planners who are thinking about where are you going to put that wastewater plant, or how do you want to re-engineer your treatment facilities around water resources.
Well, Mark, maybe that's
looking at different climate change scenarios, et cetera.
I'm just wondering, maybe that's a way to get at some of these issues. Then is I know this looks like Jay Monahan sent that around actually this morning. But maybe we can actually talk to somebody at the EPA and maybe ask them to talk a little bit about this toolkit. Do a presentation on it. I mean, part of what I'm trying to do is can we start talking a little bit about adaptation then within these
walls?
And
all right, so
very good.
I wanted to just, since you guys are here, I'm working on some slides for the advisory board meeting for Clean next week, and have been pulling some stats together. Just to give you a quick update on where things stand, we have 93 resources that are currently cataloged and clean and available to the public. Through the other two review camps, we have a total of 315 resources that have passed through the camps, and that includes 181 learning activities, 79 videos, 44 visualizations, and 4 short demonstrations experiments, with 1 podcast slipping through somehow or another. And then we've been struggling with these external expert reviews. We've actually got about 78 out of those 93 that have been through review after a lot of struggle. And we've had 3 resources that actually failed that external review.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, in the scheme of things, that's not a huge percentage.
Right, but because
we still have like 234 that haven't been externally reviewed, which is mostly the June and July camps, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of how it breaks down by the climate literacy principles, it's pretty well balanced, with probably more in the area of how we understand climate than any of the other principles. And then also in terms of energy, as we've sort of categorized by energy awareness, we've got a lot that focus on the different types of energy, renewable or not. Then we've got much far fewer that relate to the issues of energy access and equity. In other words, kind of the social equity issues, sort of energy justice, climate justice issues. So that's just kind of a quick overview. But so we're definitely making some good progress here.
Good.
So let's see, anything else that we should cover?
Well, I could mention there's a new version of a software that drives something called Ocean Climate Interactive. I'm not sure whether either one of you are familiar with that website that was developed by COSI Ocean Systems. And it's basically a concept map system, and it actually other people can develop them. But what's kind of interesting is it shows relationships between various elements, and then you can attach various resources to it. Now, at this point, what it has is mostly material related to ocean and climate stuff, but certainly there's no restriction to certainly the software could be used to do that. This is one of those resources that is kind of hard to classify. I don't even know whether it ended up in the clean collection at all, because it's basically something that connects to all kinds of other materials that we might want to include. So it's not there yet. But it's if you haven't looked at that website, just look for I think it's Ocean-Climate Interactive. It's actually quite neat what they've done there. So I just mentioned that to you. They use a piece of software that they're calling Climb now. So,
yeah.
And I know that at the top of the hour, I'm going to sit in on a presentation around it. But if there's something there that might be useful for folks here, I'll maybe do on another call. I'll maybe talk a little bit.
Yeah. It looks really interesting.
I know they spent at least $500,000 developing the system. So.
Yeah. This is out of the COSI in Maine.
Yes, it is. The University of Maine. It's out of there. And obviously there's this their focus is on the relationship between ocean and climate, so it's relevant to us. So, you know, actually, again, I keep thinking about presentations. That's also something that we might ask someone from there, Annette, perhaps to talk about that project. It might be for a web tour. Might be people here too.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So, as far as you know, this has been cataloged as a potential resource in DeClean.
I can't remember. I think I put it into a holding tank.
All right.
Because it's complicated. It's kind of like when we're looking at the NASA websites. Well, what do you do with climate.gov? There's certainly materials in there that are extraordinarily useful to us. Some of them quite original to that website. But how do we reference the whole thing, the whole collection? So we've got a number of them like that, and I don't think we've, if I remember correctly, I think the idea was how could we judge the whole site when it's changing so rapidly, and I think the idea was we might just simply reference, here are sort of other composite sites that in some ways are kind of like clean, and some of the resources may well have been reviewed, but we're not making any effort to go into all of that, so I don't know quite.
Yeah, so... Scott, would you do me a favor and send a note to the resource collector list reminding people about this resource?
Okay, I'll check to see whether it's actually in the system, too.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this should not be overlooked. It's pretty impressive from what I'm looking at just now.
Good.
And it obviously has a lot of overlap.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of resources underneath that, too, when you start getting into clicking on some of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of material there. Dude. It's just there. So, very good.
All righty.
All right.
I'm good for today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Good talking to you all.
For you both. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks.
Yep. Like you chimed in around that. I sent the URL for the Facebook for with the pictures of the poster going up in Reagan.
Mm.
So we're all up to date.
All righty. Thank you.
Okay, that's great.
Bye-bye.
Adios.
Great. Bye.